2016 SEM, the award-winning Crunch Time.
Find your kind of value at Honda with offers across a range of vehicles. See honda.com.au.
Welcome back. This is Crunch Time for Honda. Find your kind of value at Honda. See honda.com.au. And the TAC safety barriers save lives, getting us towards zero. The Geelong CEO, Brian Cook, about to join us. He's alongside Dal and Bob Murphy down at Geelong. Jerry Waitley, Anthony Hudson with you here at the MCG. John Worsfold will join us as a special guest as we continue to talk about last night. But the Cats, they had the job done for them last night by Port Adelaide, by Port Adelaide going down to Essendon, ensuring that the Cats will be finalists again this year. Brian Cook joins us. Morning to you, Brian. Were you watching last night just hoping that Essendon did the right thing for you?
Yes, I was, actually. I had a keen interest in the game last night, and I felt a little bit relieved, albeit for a small amount of time before. And I never got any SMSs. I thought I might have got a few, well done, Cookie, or whatever. I didn't get one. So obviously, there's bigger things ahead for a lot of people.
Would you have been a little bit nervous going into today with everybody expecting Geelong just to beat the Gold Coast? Would that have presented a bit of a challenge to the team?
Yeah, probably. I mean, some sort of challenge, for sure. When I looked at the... I'm not a betting man. I can't be, by the way. But when I looked at the betting yesterday, we were $1.01 and Gold Coast was $17. And I'm thinking, oh, I hate this. I really hate this.
Keep that away from the players.
Brian, you've shown extraordinary faith, really, in Chris Scott by extending the contract the length you have. Why the need to extend him so far?
A strong personal belief I have is that, you know, you've got to think of the short term and the long term. And so for any coach, it's about this week, next month, in particular next month for us, next year and the next 5 years. So I think coaches have got to have skin in the game if they're good coaches. And Chris is a good coach, like pretty much all of the coaches in the top eight, to be honest. And so for stability and for growth and for the transition post Dangerfield, Selwood and Ablett, I think we need someone who makes decisions not only for this week but for the next 5 years. And Chris is ideally that person.
When you tried to look at him, as you would have been making a decision like this and what he's achieved, how do you define success? Obviously, his coaching record in win-loss is incomparable, basically, but Geelong haven't reached the level in the finals that obviously you would have hoped since the premiership of 2011. So how did you come up with the assessment of Chris's coaching ability in a success sense?
Oh, it's pretty much the reasons we employed him in the first place. It's the technical skills he's got. It's the management skills he has, the leadership skills. He's fit into the culture. His personal qualities around passion and energy and relationship building. So there's a lot of areas, and not simply the win-loss ratio. Our football club has all of its teams in the finals this year. That's the first time since the under-19s we've had three teams in the finals. So, look, the club is going well. Is it going excellently? No, because we're not in the top four and so forth. So, but, you never know in the finals. We might be okay. We might win a few games and gather a bit of momentum. But, they're the reasons.
Would it have been a failure if you hadn't made finals this year? Do you assess the season as a fail?
I would have been really disappointed. Certainly, probably a failure on field. But at the start of the year, if someone had said to me, look, if you can win 14 or 15 games, would you take it? And I probably would. And we got to 13, so we're not far off. We're not far off, achieving some of the early goals. And remember also, the footy club is not simply about on field. It's about our sponsorships and GMHBA and Ford. It's about our membership, which has gone to 65,000. We have an alternative training venue at Warren Ponds, which is the MCG size. I could go on and on. So there's a lot of other key performance areas where we're going really, really well.
Brian, have you thought about who you'd like to play in the first week of the finals?
No, not really. No. To be honest with you, I actually haven't looked at the table too much over the last two or three weeks because, really it was about us winning games.
Were you anticipating around more round 23 anxiety? Because we were. A few weeks out, were you thinking that's going to be an uncomfortable round 23?
Absolutely. I'm thinking that today's game's going to be on the edge of the seat all day, and you know, that churning feeling in your gut, which I get, and all those things. I thought that might have been and probably would have been the case today.
Well, I suppose the percentage is going to be the thing of interest today. It's small fry, I know. But with Tom Hawkins in the running for the Coleman Medal, we were discussing earlier around of the full forwards who are capable, who wants it the most. Can you give us an insight into would Tom have an eye on it? Does he have an eye on that medal?
Look, I don't think he would have an intense eye on it. Knowing Tom, I have this vision where he kicks three or four or five goals. He's equal with Ben Brown and Lance Franklin, and he's got the ball in the last quarter. He kicks a goal and he passes it off. That's the vision I have right now. and I think Tom would be okay with that.
And every full forward pass and present just shake the head.
Cut it out, Tom, kick a goal.
Hey, Cool, you just touched on how to measure the season. I'm not saying that you will in the coming weeks, but if you don't win a final, does that change your measurement of where the club's at right now? You've made finals, so you feel like that's not a failure on field. But what happens if in a fortnight's time that doesn't go to plan? How do you see that? And then what changes in your approach going forward?
Yeah, look, I'd be really disappointed that we couldn't win a final if that happened. But, I wouldn't change a lot of the strategies that we're thinking about. I mean, this is a long-term game. We've got good coaches, good players. We've been going through a transition for many, many years now. We only have four players left from 2011. And yet we've finished, I think, in the finals every year apart from 15 and been in the finals 13 out of 15 years. There's a lot of clubs, ask Melbourne, who just have made the eight once in 12 years. So I think our supporters understand we've had a great deal of success. We're now going through a transition. It's taking a while, and we haven't bottomed out. If you don't bottom out, it's actually difficult at times to get in the top four again because of the draft picks and so on and so forth. So that's the choice for us might be, look, would you prefer to finish 7th and 8th and not have a great chance of winning the grand final, or go to the bottom and get your draft picks and go to the top four? That's the reality. I went through that at the West Coast Eagles during the 90s. And for us, we've probably not taken either path, sort of right in the middle, because we can't afford to bottom out.
But is that also a reflection? You talk about not going to the bottom, that you've got players that can almost single-handedly always keep you in that middle bracket. And that's following on to my next question. You've got the big three. There's so much spoken about them. What is your contingency when they eventually move on? What is the plan when... I mean, they may play... The way they're going, it may be forever, and we accept that, and we all love them. There's no doubt about that.
But it's a list list management issue.
But you seem to do it better than anybody. Why and how? How do you maintain it?
I mean, the Geelong way is to try and, attract... And Wellesley's way, which is part of Geelong way, is trying to attract... players with enough talent but with great character. It's what we've been doing for 20 years now, and Sydney does the same, I think. Hawthorn to a large extent does, and I think it works.
You made the statement there, Brian, we can't afford to bottom out. Why do you say that?
Commercially, if we finished on the bottom 2 years in a row, it would be hard for us to maintain a P&L, a cash flow that's going to work for us. Our average attendance is about 30,000, a bit less, about 29. We really need to get that up to about 35, I think, in order for us to finish on the bottom in a successive sense, in a continuous sense. And I won't go through all of the financials, but that's the bottom line for us. We probably need to get a bigger crowd, and that won't happen until we get a bigger stadium.
For the teams that do bottom out, priority picks are being spoken about, and Tim Kelly's been used as sort of the poster boy for giving bottom clubs access to mature age players, as if maybe there was a long queue for Kelly and somehow or another Geelong ended up with him, which I don't actually think matches the reality. Where are you in the debate around helping the bottom teams with some sort of special access priority or otherwise?
I think there needs to be some help. I don't know to what extent. I hope it's not overboard, because quite often what you find is whatever help you do provide the bottom sides, it takes 3 or 4 years for it to come to fruition. There's no really quick fix in this, in my opinion, unless you get some senior players who, you know, through free agency or some other mechanism. So I think that we should increase the help we do give to the bottom sides, but not to the extent where, you know, it's a real problem for other clubs for some years.
Are you frustrated that Tim Kelly hasn't extended at this stage, given the year he's had, Brian?
Oh, not really. No, he's got another year to go. You know, we've basically got another 13, 14 months to work through this. And, you know, I haven't got, personally, I've got no intention of considering a transfer or over to Perth for Tim. The issue for us is to provide a lot of support around him and his family and try to ensure that his entire family is comfortable in Geelong in the longer term.
And you think, you're confident you can do that?
Yes, yeah, no, I am. Yeah, we are. Yep.
Okay. The return of Gary Ablett, has it been what you hoped it would be?
Yes, I think so. Yeah, I thought that Gary might start off a bit slow and come home well. And it's the first time he's played finals since 2010 or 11 when he left. 2010, yeah. So end of 10.
Yep.
So, you know, I think it's a bit of a win-win, really. You know, Gary plays finals and he's getting 30 touches a game the last 6 weeks on average. So he's playing really well. He's come back for the right reasons, and I think everyone respects that.
Do you think he's been marked hard publicly during the year?
At times, yes. Yeah. For a 34-year-old, yes.
Has he coped with that pretty well?
No, he's been excellent. He's managed that well.
Brian, what could have been a really big and nervous day, you can just sit back and relax now and count Tommy's goals.
Yeah, the only thing I'm worried about today is Tommy's goals and injury. Hopefully there's no injuries.
Or
that's
reports.
About it. Or reports. Or reports, yeah. Good
will one. They rest anyone, Brian?
No, I don't think so. No.
Has Tom got a contract
bonus
for winning the Coleman or not?
No. I've got a funny story about that if you had time in terms of bonuses. I remember it was 2007 or eight.
Seven.
Eight. They're all Australians, yeah. And the all Australian team, and the first two or three that got announced, I was clapping them madly and widely and loudly. By about number eight, and I think we had 11, they all had bonuses in their contracts. I think it cost us $500,000. So now we have no all Australian bonuses, not one.
Thanks for joining us, Brian. Good luck in the finals.
See you later, guys. Bye.